And good morning. Welcome to the program. My mind is set like flint to help people this morning. I only have two articles in front of me, and a lot of times when I look at these, I think, how am I going to deliver this information where it actually makes sense to somebody? So I want to start off with this idea right here. Okay, we know by watching commercials on television or on the computer, meaning the internet, that cholesterol is just the most wicked evil thing of all time. They actually say that things like LDL cholesterol is evil and the bad form of cholesterol, and a lot of times they'll say HDL is good. But what I want to do is I want to take some of these complex articles. Well, they're complex to me. You don't even know. Sometimes I have to read these two or three times to try to make sure I understand what are they actually trying to say and how can I, you know, deliver the information where it makes it sound simple. Okay, in the past, I have talked about things that are found in nature. We're just talking about natural compounds. And so, for example, if a human being were to eat onions or eat an apple, the apple itself may contain a flavanol compound or flavonoid called quercetin. Have you ever heard of quercetin before? It's spelled Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin. Now, this may be a bit much information to tag on to it, but what I think of every time I hear the term quercetin, I always think about the main component that makes up quercetin. It's called rutin, R-U-T-I-N. This article basically is explaining how quercetin protects your blood vessels against cholesterol. And so I don't think that's going to be too hard of a concept to kind of buy into. Does anybody want a ton of cholesterol sticking to the inner lining of your arteries? You know, gluing itself to that inner lining called the glycocalyx or the endothelium? No. You don't want a bunch of gunky plaque building up in delicate arteries and vessels, especially that goes to your brain or goes to your heart. And so they're just taking a look at this right here. They're asking the question in this research, and I'm trying to make it sound simple. The number one takeaway that I want you to come away with is that maybe quercetin ensures that the body is better able or equipped to clean up any extra cholesterol. If there's a surplus of cholesterol, well, I want quercetin to clean the stuff up. This is the actual title of the article right here. Okay. Quercetin improves macrophage reverse cholesterol transport in apolipoprotein A, E deficient mice fed a high fat diet. You look at that and you're going to go, man, what are they talking about? That doesn't make sense to me. So I'm going to try to make it sound simple. Here's a study. They're a cardiologist. These are the experts of all experts when it comes to everything to do with a person's heart. And I think we could probably agree that if you looked up stats on the number one cause of death, it's probably still heart disease. Okay? So cardiologists at Taishan Medical University in China, they experimented with mice that have a defective gene for what's called apolipoprotein E. I am assuming that may be the first time you've heard that term. Well, apolipoprotein E is a protein that the body can use as a building block for what's called good cholesterol. Sometimes that's called HDL. So what they're saying is the more apolipoprotein E that a person has, you take the good cholesterol and you make it even better. I've heard it said before that HDL cholesterol is kind of like a garbage truck that goes around your arteries looking for old rusted garbage cholesterol to pick up and clean out so it can be broken down and kicked out of the body, you know, when you have a bowel movement. So let me ask you a question. Do you personally know anyone who has a relative or in their family, they got one heart problem after the other? I mean, I hear these stories probably more than you do just because of, you know, what I think about and talk to people about. So What do you think about a family that all the men die prematurely from heart attacks when they're in their 50s, or they just don't make it very long? Well, this might be a good conversation for you then. And so here's how the Chinese did this. I actually think it's kind of genius. But anyway, the Chinese used mice that resemble people with a genetic predisposition toward clogged blood vessels, heart attacks, and strokes. I think we kind of covered the whole gamut of heart disease. So they're looking at mice that are genetically predisposed to getting clogged arteries. I know you probably don't hear of this, but mice have heart attacks too, and they have strokes. A stroke could be as simple as a blood clot interrupting blood flow to the brain, something like that. Okay, and to top it off, the researchers gave extra fat to these animals to see if they couldn't push their heart to the limit. And so they know for a fact that when you take mice and you put them on a high-fat diet, it does not go well for the heart of the mouse. I know that's kind of cruel, but would you rather them experiment on mice or human beings? And don't call me and say, isn't that what they're doing on human beings right now? Well, you can if you want. It's your choice. Okay, now some of these mice, besides a high-fat diet and being predisposed to having clogged arteries, some of these mice also received a flavonoid called quercetin. That's what I started off saying this morning. Now, in case you're wondering what the dose is, and I do find this interesting, they said if the animals had been adult humans, then they would have received roughly about 100 milligrams of quercetin per day. Now, mice in a control group, they received a compound called carboxymethyl cellulose sodium, and I didn't know what that was, so I looked it up. It's a compound that is used to treat dry eyes. Now, I'm not pursuing the idea, why do they use that instead of quercetin? So, some of the mice were given a compound used to treat dry eyes. I don't know the reason why. There's probably a reason. It just doesn't flesh it out. But the other group of mice, they were given a little bit of quercetin. So you got to understand that cholesterol in itself is just a normal component of your cells of your body. Every cell in your body requires cholesterol as a building block. If you're a man or a woman, you produce hormones. Well, guess what the hormones are made of? Mostly cholesterol. Yes, some are made of protein, for example, the thyroid. So, cholesterol in itself is not bad. But I'm telling you right now, if cholesterol begins to oxidize, what I want you to think of is if cholesterol begins to rust, that's when it can be very annoying and start to play a role in damaging the blood vessels. And so what they say is, if the macrophages, which is a type of white blood cell in your arterial walls, if they absorb too much cholesterol, then bingo, all of a sudden your arteries are becoming so much more narrowed, in which you don't have to be a genius in engineering to figure this out. If you take a water hose and the only amount of water that comes out of it is like the, you know, from a pencil because it's clogged up, you're not going to get good water flow, or you're not going to get good water coming out of the hose. The reason why you don't want really narrowed arteries, what's going to happen to a brain cell if you cannot deliver enough oxygen and blood flow and nutrients to it? Well, you're going to develop dementia. You tell me, if I take a rubber band and wrap it around your finger and cut off the blood supply, how long is it going to take? Until your finger goes numb. Well, the last time I checked, you got to deliver oxygen to it. I remember when I grew up in Oklahoma, I would watch my dad take this device that had like a rubber, it was like a rubber disc with a hole in it. But anyway, if you cut off the blood supply to a hog's gonads, they're going to fall off. They die. You want to have good, rich blood flow. I've said this many times, but I'll say it again. The life of the flesh is in the blood. And that would be a quote from Leviticus, right? And so for decades, cardiologists, I'm going back to the study now, for decades, cardiologists, they thought they had this idea that if they could only reduce the amount of cholesterol in the body, that would keep the blood vessels healthy. But that's not exactly proven to be a huge payoff, okay? And that's a little bit of an oversimplification. That may be a topic for another day. So what the Chinese did was they injected their mice with macrophages that had already absorbed a lot of cholesterol. And then they took, and I think they used a radioactive isotope, and they labeled the cholesterol so they could track it and find out, what does the body do with this? Now listen to this right here. This might be one of the most important takeaways right here. After 8 weeks, I think that's plenty of time for testing a mouse to see what happens to their cholesterol and their arteries. The Chinese found significantly more labeled cholesterol in the liver, the bile, and the feces of the mice that had been given quercetin as compared to the other test animals that didn't get it. So what does that mean? I've got four graphs I'm looking at. It doesn't mean anything to you because you can't see them. But it means the body is excreting or getting rid of the excess oxidized cholesterol. Dude, that's what you want. I promise you, you want your body working so efficient and effective at removing old, rusted cholesterol from your arteries that it doesn't have a chance to build up in the form of plaque. Does that make sense? Now, this may be a side note, but if you go to the doctor and they do just a routine blood analysis for your, they call it a lipid panel. And the ones that I like to look at, it'll measure total cholesterol. Then usually they're going to have, under that, they're going to have the blood test called triglycerides. I don't mind telling you, I'm going to skip the cholesterol topic, but triglycerides, that one tells you so, so much about the human body. So, for example, if the total triglycerides are above the number 200 or even 150, that's a pretty active predictor that you're heading toward a stroke. It's kind of what we're talking about here. So, I don't want that to happen. What your triglycerides should be is probably around 50 or 60 at the most, if it's a fasting blood test, meaning you did not eat anything about 10 to 12 hours before you had the blood drawn. Does that make sense? So there's another test. I think the lab that I use, they charge $17. Maybe $17 and change. Maybe it's $17.17. I don't really know. Close to it, though. But it's a marker called apolipoprotein B. Even if you've never heard of that, that has been shown to be so much more accurate than just looking at the bad cholesterol, which is called LDL. So if you go to your nurse practitioner, if you go to your physician's assistant, if you go to direct care, urgent care, ER, you go to your primary care, PCP, any of that's good. But if they do a cholesterol test and your cholesterol levels come back high, it just might be in your very, very best interest to say, can I have that $17 test? I'll pay for it cash. It's called apolipoprotein B. B as in boy. I think it's like, what, five times more predictive and accurate than LDL cholesterol. But that might be in your best interest. So the other way of saying this is, if your cholesterol is a little bit high, but the apolipoprotein B is low or in the good range, you probably don't have a whole lot to worry about as far as getting your arteries clogged up. Okay, here's number two takeaway. The Chinese also found less of one unique compound. It's called malonyldehyde. That's known as MDA. I think I butchered that. But what that means is, how much free radical activity do we have? How much rusting is going on? And lo and behold, the mice that took the quercetin, they absolutely had the lowest amount of free radical activity, which means this may explain why when they gave the mice quercetin, why the researchers found less oxidized phospholipids. And I'm looking at a chart right here. You can't see it, but it's huge. The least amount of gunk in the arteries were in the mice that had the quercetin. You ever heard the phrase that an apple a day keeps the doctor away? Maybe some people say an onion a day. I haven't actually heard that. Here's the technical jargon right here. In test tubes, quercetin increased the production of transport proteins such as ABCA1 and ABCG1 in macrophages. I'm not going to try to read those to you. That's just too much. But here's the punchline for you. You're listening to me right now. Those proteins I just mentioned, they pump cholesterol out of the immune cell, after which the body can get rid of it, dispose of it. Okay? So what's our takeaway? You don't want your arteries clogged up? Talk to your doctor about quercetin. Maybe the doctor is just like I am. I'm open. Anything that would be of a great benefit. Okay, one more article right here. So this is completely along the same lines. It's similar. So what is the whole takeaway by telling you about quercetin in mice that are genetically predisposed to clogged arteries? Because I want everybody to have tools from which they can choose from. You're going to be the sum total of all the choices that you make. So either we make really good decisions or we don't. And here's the next one right here. This one, I really like this one also. So the theme this morning is, what do we do when a person's got clogged arteries, or you've got a bunch of cholesterol in your arteries, or calcification or plaque? Okay, so I came across this article, and I really found this interesting. Now, I don't know if you'll feel the same way about it, but I'm telling you right now, this is going to give you some clues. And, you know, what would you say? Are you going to eat food? And the answer is yes. Except for rare circumstances, maybe there's a human being that's just so sick because of the side effect of a drug that they have no appetite. You're probably thinking, I've never heard of that. It's real. There are some people that feel so absolutely bad, and some of it's just the toxic side effects of the prescription drugs they're on, you know, unfortunately. Nobody wants that for them. That they couldn't eat if they wanted to, and all of a sudden their body just starts wasting away into nothingness. So, I mean, I don't think that's rocket science. If you're not eating food, your body's got to get fuel somewhere. It's going to be eating you. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, you may have heard before that vegetables are very healthy for your arteries, but there are certain unique types of vegetables that offer so much more vascular protection than other ones do. And in this article, they're going to talk about, if you really want to protect your arteries against atherosclerosis, which is like a hardening of the arteries, you know, plaque, then cabbage is so much more effective than tomatoes are, or even spinach, or eating beans. And I'm willing to bet that there's at least two people this morning listening to me that kind of want to know this. And on top of that, they show that onions and garlic offer even more protection than cabbage does. This comes from researchers at the University of Western Australia and the Journal of the American Heart Association. So, most likely, your doctor is not listening to my program this morning. They have their journal out going, it's my day off Saturday. I cannot wait to read my journal. The Journal of the American Heart Association. It's so fascinating. And you already understand, this is a journal article telling people, you might want to eat these things. It doesn't say a thing about a drug in here. That's the other reason why I looked at it. Because I want something simple that everybody can do. So here's a study right here. Here's your first key point. The researchers used data from 1,226 Australian women. Now, no men were in the study, only women. You got that? Okay. Now, the next point is, all of these women were either 70 years old or older when the study began back in 1998. Here's the next point. The researchers knew the women's diet, because the women filled out diet surveys, so they knew what they were eating, and then they followed them for 15 years. I did not say 15 days or 15 weeks or 15 months. I said 15 years. To me, that would give a little bit of credibility to the study. And so here's the next point. This one's a little negative, but, you know, just forgive me. It's just part of life. They tracked which women died as a result of their blood vessels clogging up, as cardiologists would probably prefer to say, atherosclerosis. That's your next point. Okay, are you with me on that? Okay, here's the result right here. Of course, I have the technical advantage because I've got all the charts right here. I can look at them. And I like studying graphs and charts. Here's the results. The more vegetables the women ate, the lower their chance, and here's the punchline, of fatal arteriosclerosis. You with me on that? Here it is right here. Here's your next takeaway. The women who ate vegetables three or more times a day were 42% less likely to die from atherosclerosis than the women who ate vegetables less than two times a day. Well, I wonder if you could make that claim by taking a statin drug. I don't know. So do you want to have a bunch of gunk build up in your arteries? No. Now, the graph right here, I'm not going to go into it, but here's what they do. They draw a line. Women that eat three servings of vegetables a day or more compared to women that eat two or less. And I can tell you by looking at the graph, the women that eat two servings of vegetables a day or less, they die a whole lot sooner. Now, you got to remember, they're 70 when they started, but they followed them. This is a 15-year follow-up. What that means is if you were 80 when the study began, that means 95. Anyway, enough of that. When the researchers looked at each type of vegetable separately, they saw that for every 10 grams of cabbage, or cabbage vegetables, and that would include the cruciferous ones, that's broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, you know, stuff like that, cabbage. I don't know about anybody else, but I love purple cabbage. Purple cabbage is one of my all-time favorites. I can never get enough of it. It never gets old. I always like it. Kind of like broccoli, too. So all they did was they gave them 10 grams. And what happened is it decreased the chance of dying from arteriosclerosis or atherosclerosis by 17%. And you're thinking, well, what is 10 grams in English? Well, I looked it up. It's 0.353 ounces. That would be simple. Could you imagine if somebody had some Bubby sauerkraut or kimchi or any other type of sauerkraut and they just put their fork in there? Bingo, you're there. How hard is that? Now get this right here. For every 5 grams, which is 0.176 ounces, that's just a teeny tiny amount. So when they had just 5 grams of allium vegetables, that's going to be chives, garlic, onions, leeks, things like that, they reduced the risk of death by 18%. Okay, what can we learn from this? For comparison, 75 grams of vegetables in the general per day diet reduced the risk of death by 20%. That's like 3 ounces, folks. Actually, that's a little bit less than 3 ounces. That should be very, very, very easy for anyone that's interested in taking care of themselves to do. You know, if you have knowledge or you have information or you say, I want to be wise or I want to be a good steward of taking care of my body, well, when you hear stuff like this, you think, you know what? I can do that. Other people, it may just go in one ear and out the other. Okay, the researchers suspect that the main active ingredient in cabbage vegetables are glucosinolates and orthocyanates. These are sulfur-containing substances with an antioxidant and an anti-inflammatory effect. You know what that sounds like to me? Sounds like glucosamine sulfate. You can read all you want about that topic. It's a pretty good one. Now, you're going to have to play along with me on this one right here because I almost think this is a little bit comical. because I'm reading the researchers' comments, and just listen how they say this. It was their choice to word it this way. So this is what the researchers are saying. These are their words. Cruciferous and allium vegetables, that's going to be cabbage and onions, they're recognized to be a good source of several non-nutritive phytochemicals such as organosulfur compounds. Did you see how they slipped that word in there, non-nutritive? Well, that's not the word that I would use. I would say they have a very high nutritive quality. It's providing something for your arteries that keeps them in better working order. I wouldn't call that non-nutritive, but that's just the way that they say it. And of course, what do they always say? We need more studies on this. Well, why? Isn't that enough? Maybe because they want to get another paycheck. I don't know. Can I ask you a personal question? Do you have any, you know, reason or purpose for your life why your body should last longer? I know that may seem ridiculous, but, you know, answer it for me. Or ask yourself, answer it for yourself. What reasons do I have to keep my body healthier longer? Or maybe you can't think into the future. Maybe all you can do is think about right now. Well, then ask yourself that question. Is there any reason that I have to live very efficiently and healthily right now at this point in my life? Is there any reason my body should stay in good working order? Or should I just throw caution to the wind and eat whatever I want? I'm not going to read these articles to you because I didn't copy them off, but here's one study right here. A little garlic every day makes you live 3 years longer. Folks, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I want y'all to tell me which drug makes you live 3 years longer. Please, tell me. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, the one that keeps you from dying. Okay, I get that. But not dying compared to... So let me say it a different way. What if you have no energy, you hurt all the time, your sleep is horrible, you're in a bad mood, you feel like you're dealing with anxiety or depression, your gut is all messed up, your tummy hurts all the time, you're constipated, you don't have any energy to do anything productive. Now, you tell me, is that really the life that you want to live? Or is there another life where you exude excellence and you feel great all the time? You tell me. If you feel horrible all the time, how's it going to work tomorrow morning when it's time to get up and go to church services? Well, you're probably not going to make it, are you? And you're probably going to tell yourself, well, we'll just see what happens here. Well, that's not really, just seeing what's going to happen is not going to get you back to good. You're actually going to have to take action. No. I think this is the way it should be. I think I'm right about this. I think that your sleep should be so good that when you wake up in the morning, you're ready to get up and start your day and get to work. And I don't mean scrolling on Facebook. I mean actual work, something that's productive that makes the world a better place. I already know there's a bunch of people that are listening right now. They have jobs where they're blessing the world and they're making the world a better place. Okay, here's another article right here. They say it's a longevity tip. It says if you eat spicy foods 2 to 3 times a week. What does it say right here? Here's a simplicity. If you treat yourself to a meal with a lot of red pepper a couple times a week, then your chances of getting old are greater than if you eat red pepper less often. I don't have the chart in front of me where I can read the numbers, but that's the title of it. Here's another one right here. If you eat more of these foods, you will live longer. And I'm just reading it, so don't argue with me. I haven't looked it up. It says the more foods such as espresso, blueberries, raspberries, olives, peppers, and spinach you eat daily, the longer you may live. The antioxidants in these products reduce the risk of deadly forms of cancer and cardiovascular diseases. Now, There is a phone line open here, and I just looked at the clock. I've been talking for 30 minutes. So if you want to call me on the radio and ask a question, this is your opportunity to do so. The number here at the station is 903. You may want to write this down. 903-589-8507. So whatever your questions are, now's a pretty good time to call me and ask away. Here's another article right here. Good, let's go to the phone lines. It's going to be so much more fun than me talking. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yeah, did you turn your radio off?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Well, I think I had to hang up because he just couldn't make... I've got my radio... I'm sorry, I've got the control board turned on to the best of my knowledge. So call back one more time. Let's give it another shot. 903-589-8507. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
All right. I have no idea, but evidently something's wrong with the control board. Would anybody care to call and just put it to the test for me, please? Let's see if we can get through. There we go. Thanks, buddy. Good morning. How are you today? Can you hear me all right?
Hello?
Nope. Well, guess what? It ain't working. So that's three times. I struck out three times. Let me look at this right here. Man, I don't know. As far as I know, maybe somebody pushed a button. I don't have the technical knowledge. I think I have everything turned on. Anyway, I'm sorry about that. So you're going to have to endure me talking for another 30 minutes. Anyway, no, seriously, I don't know. I'm looking at the control board, and as far as I know, I have all the buttons pushed. I don't know what else to do. Okay, let me see what else I can find right here. Okay, here's one right here. I think I started to tell you this one last week. And this is a legitimate article. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you like a framework here. All right. There is a compound known as nitric oxide, and it's produced in the human body. And so let me give you a few examples. So when a person is younger, their body is so efficient at manufacturing and making what's called nitric oxide. You got to have it. This is not the same as nitrous oxide. That's if you're a dentist in Bullard, you want to use as much nitric oxide as possible, or laughing gas, to try to sedate your patients. Okay? So, nitric oxide, we produce great amounts of it when we're young, but as we age, the efficiency at which we produce it just goes in the tank, it goes downhill. I'm almost positive that in the past, and maybe you didn't hear this, if you want to totally destroy the ability of your body to produce nitric oxide, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you what it does. Nitric oxide has so much to do with keeping your blood vessels open. So, and you know that when your blood vessels are dilated and they're open, things go really, really well, because your blood, that's how you deliver nutrients to all the cells and tissues in the body. And the last time I checked, oxygen is one extremely important element. And so in this article, they're just talking about how very brief, I'll say it briefly, that cacao, or if I say chocolate, that it's been shown to boost nitric oxide. Now in the past, I think I've read articles showing that when people consume dark chocolate, And it usually adds, you know, some time to their life. It extends their life because it keeps their arteries in better repair. So here it is right here. A mere 6 grams a day of dark chocolate can help reduce high blood pressure in older men and women. Does that get your attention? It does mine. They say that the 30 milligrams of polyphenols contained in this amount of chocolate, it helps lower their blood pressure. Researchers at the University Hospital in Cologne, Germany discovered. You know what I heard on the news this week? They said that Germany is the number 3 economy in the world. I did not know that. I figured it would have been, you know, a different country. Anyway, the researchers gave 40 test subjects 6 grams of dark chocolate daily for 18 weeks. Now, I bet you anything that was an easy proposition. They said, would you be willing to be our guinea pig? We're going to get you to eat chocolate. People said, sure. Okay, during the period, the subject's systolic blood pressure decreased by 3 millimeters of mercury. I know that doesn't sound fabulous, but you got to get in your mind that every little thing that you do is going to create or make a difference for the better. The diastolic blood pressure decreased by 2 millimeters of mercury. And it says the test subjects that ate the dark chocolate for 18 weeks, they didn't gain a lick of weight. Maybe that's another point that's worth repeating. Yeah, I bet they really had a hard time finding people to volunteer. So the researchers, then they did something. This is what they did next. They measured the concentration of polyphenols in the subject's blood after eating the chocolate. And I don't know that I need to go into great details, but it showed 2 compounds, epicatechin and catechin. They greatly increased, usually about the 2-hour mark to 3-hour mark after they had chocolate. Now, could there be a reason why people crave dark chocolate when they're stressed? Maybe I should say it a different way. Maybe when you have tremendous stress, that's when your arteries constrict, and that's when they tighten up. You just don't get the blood flow. You don't really have to be a genius to understand this stuff. When you're angry and you're emotional and you're stressed, that is not good for your circulatory system or your heart. So the researchers here, they suspected that the polyphenols, you know, found in chocolate or cacao, I talk to people all the time. A lot of people tell me they just take straight cacao and they stir it in their coffee, or they add it to a protein drink, or they put it in a smoothie or something like that, or they put it in their tea. Seriously. The researchers suspect that the phenols led to an increase in the production of nitric oxide in the blood vessels. Okay, well, why would that be important? Because this helps dilate the blood vessels, and as a result, blood pressure goes down. Okay, do you want high blood pressure? No. Do you want your blood pressure to be in a more reasonable range where you can feel good and function? Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of gives you some information on what you might do to kind of supplement to improve the health of your arteries. So to test this theory, they measured the amount of an enzyme called S-nitrosglutathione in the test subject's blood. Okay, this enzyme is a marker for the concentration of nitric oxide. So there is a drug called Cialis or Viagra. Those are nitric oxide drugs. You can't really see what happens here, but I'm looking at the chart, and they start measuring men and women's nitric oxide levels, and they eat chocolate. At the 6-week mark, the 12-week mark, and the 18-week mark, the number keeps going up. I'm always so curious about this, because when I see charts that show that the longer that you do something, the better things get, I keep wondering, well, what if we just extended the study out past 18 weeks and made it for 52 weeks? Wouldn't that be something if you knew that dark chocolate helped get your arteries in much better repair over time? Sure, dark chocolate once a month is fine, But that's not what they did. They gave him just a little bit every single day. Probably breaks down to like a square or two. Okay, and they measure the enzymes right after chocolate's consumed. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that one. I can't read the rest of it. It's just too technical. So what I want you to do is, here's your takeaway. Cacao or dark chocolate has been proven to be very beneficial when it comes to helping the body maintain good blood flow, oxygen delivery, nutrient delivery. Okay, now I've got to find another study because I didn't plan on this. Let me see if I can find one real quick. No, I don't want to read that one. There's got to be a better one here. See, now you're finding out I'm not exactly... Oh, here we go. You know what? This one right here, can you just kind of just be open-minded about this one? And of course, when I saw this and I read it, and I don't think I've read this in like a couple months, so I'm going to have to become familiar with it here on the air. But I just couldn't turn away from this one right here. Okay, here's what I want you to consider. There is a chemical or a substance your body produces called adrenaline. You ever heard of adrenaline before? You're in the woods, it's a beautiful walk on the trail on your property, and all of a sudden you hear growling behind you, and there's two or three or four stray dogs that think that you look like a delicious snack. Well, you might want to have a little bit of adrenaline so you can run for that tree and climb it to keep from getting eaten by the dogs. That happened to me as a child. That's why I said that. I wasn't totally making it up. Hey, you know what? Climbing is a good skill, isn't it? Anyway, there's another hormone your body produces when it's under excessive stress. It's called cortisol. I don't think I need to go into every single aspect of cortisol, but excess cortisol is not in your best interest unless you want your body to break down, if you want to not sleep at night, if you want to gain a lot of weight. Anyway, listen to this right here. It says in this study, and I'll try to find out where I found it. I didn't have it written down. It says the more positive that your emotions are, the less cortisol your body produces. Now, what's the opposite of that? The more negative your emotions are, the more cortisol your body produces. So, you know what that really, really means? You're only hurting yourself when you're negative all the time and you complain nonstop and you have a sour disposition or if you have a bad attitude. How else would you like to say that? It says, if you're in a steady relationship, and this is just a secular world doing this, so don't think too much of it. If you're in a steady relationship, positive emotions from your partner, they also put a brake on the amount of cortisol your body produces. Oh, so you can see how that turns and changes. It's not just you being positive, but if your husband or your wife is positive, so maybe it's not you. Maybe if you're living in a very negative set of circumstances, maybe if you're the one that chooses to be positive and look at the bright side, or instead of looking at the differences and complaining about it, if you just try to come together on the common ground on the things that are good, that also stops cortisol production in the other person. Okay, so I don't know that I need to explain all the negative effects of cortisol, but this is so interesting. That means what you do with your attitude has a huge impact on how the rest of the world functions. Okay, this comes from Psychoneuroendocrinology 2024, the month of September. So I think this just came out. So here's the title of the article right here. It says that what's yours is mine. Partners' everyday emotional experiences in cortisol in older adult couples. All right, here's a study right here. And this just came out last year. Psychologists at the University of California, Davis, they measured cortisol concentration in the saliva of 321 couples several times a day. So they're trying to graph it or figure it out. The men and the women studied were aged 57 to 87. So there's a 30-year gap there, or it covers a 30-year span from couples that are as young as 57 all the way up to couples that are maybe a smidgen older at 87. So each time the study participants gave a saliva sample, the study participants reported whether they experienced positive emotions such as, I'm happy, this is so interesting, and I feel relaxed, or I feel chilled, or what would you guess they would report as the negative emotions? Nervous, jittery, uneasy, I am so angry, I feel overwhelmed, I'm sad, I'm depressed. You start to get it. Another way of saying that would be, I can't handle what life throws at me. Okay, here's the results. The researchers make the comment that positive emotions lowered the concentration of cortisol in their saliva. You can see that in the figure below top left. I know you can't see it, but I can though. Okay, so this is hardly surprising. Oh, they say that you can see the negative emotions actually increase the concentration of cortisol. Folks, does this make sense to you, what I'm saying? So if you have an opportunity, and see, this is one of the things in life you get to choose. You get to choose what you're going to say. You get to choose your attitude. You get to choose if you're going to be kind to somebody. I have certainly failed multiple times. But I don't want to be negative. I want to be positive. So if I've been negative, please forgive me. I want to be positive. And so basically, they show that the more negative you are, the higher the concentration of cortisol. Now, in the realm of health, it's just going to wreck your body. You don't want that. So this ain't really surprising, or this isn't surprising. So here's the next part of it. You already got this figured out, I know. It says that positive emotions from the study participants' partners, not from them, but positive emotions from your spouse, they also lowered cortisol levels. So if you just have another person around you, even though you've had a bad day, if another person can be calm and positive, guess what that does? It starts to heal your body of the stress hormone cortisol. Isn't that good? So this was also the case when the study participants themselves reported negative emotions. A positive mood from the partner therefore helps prevent their own negative emotions from increasing cortisol levels. Well, isn't that interesting? Okay, it says we didn't find any links between a person's cortisol levels and their partner's negative emotions, suggesting that older adults may shield or protect their partner from sharing. But when they're positive, that really makes a difference. Anyway, that's one article. I think I've got 10 minutes left. Let me see if I can find another one now. And I'm so sorry. I don't know what's wrong with the phone with the control board. And it may be as simple as there's one button or two buttons that I just don't even know which ones to push. And that's just not, maybe somebody, you know, said we're going to give Roy a treat this morning. All right, where's an article? No, I think I read that one before. I don't know that I want to read that again. Let me see if I can find another one. What my normal operating procedure is, I've got to spend a little bit of time every single day trying to look for things that are, you know, this is just my interpretation, but do we call healing, is that what healing looks like, that you're on 30 prescription drugs? No. You don't even have to be a genius at this stuff. If you see a person that can barely move, they have no energy, they feel horrible, they actually start venting and saying, I just wish that God would take me, You don't have to be a genius to know that maybe something's off there. Do you think it's okay if we look at the idea that maybe they have a drug that has, to them, a bad side effect? Yeah. I want you to be in a good working order naturally. So whatever we have to do to help assist your body getting back in good repair, well, then I'd like to focus on things like that. Y'all can't tell, but I'm searching hard for an article that I can share with you. Here's one right here. I don't think I've read this one to you before. But in this article right here, here's the title of it. Ma'am, I know you're trying to call. I can see you light up on the phone board. I'm not trying to ignore you. It's just the phone. Well, let's just try and see. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hello? See, it just doesn't work. All right, so here's the title of the article right here. It says, high fitness in middle age reduces the chance of dementia by 90%. Okay? If you're 40 years or older and you do not want to become demented or develop dementia or memory loss later in life, well, it's very possible and it's not complicated. All you have to do is set your mind that you're going to become physically fit. According to a Swedish study published in Neurology, people with high levels of fitness, they have 90% less chance. Folks, you can't make that number up. If there was a drug that decreased your risk of dementia by 90%, man, I would be for that. Or if there was a natural remedy. I just don't think that exists. But according to a study published in Neurology, people with high level of fitness have 90% less chance of developing dementia later in their lives than people with average levels of fitness. You get that? Okay, here it is right here. 1968. Swedish researchers determined the fitness of 191 women age 38 to 60. The women had to cycle while the researchers gradually increased the amount of work the women had to produce to keep cycling. This continued until the women were exhausted. After the exercise test, the researchers followed the women for 44 years. 44 years. Wow. Here's the result. That's not a short study, folks. 44 years. I'm thinking there's got to be something I can extract from this right here that's good for me and everybody else. Here's the result. The fitter the women were, the smaller the chance of dementia. I think you get that, don't you? The chance of dementia among the women with the highest fitness levels was as much as 88% smaller than the women with average fitness. All right? The researchers also corrected their data for body weight after this fitness still protected. It said that high fitness did not reduce the chance of dementia to zero. But when the fittest women became demented, it happened on the average after they were 90 years of age. Oh, my goodness. Listen to this right here. If the women with moderate fitness, they became demented, this happened 11 years earlier. I don't know. What is that saying? Maybe if you're really physically fit, you can prolong dementia and you can set off by 11 years. What could a person do? Talk about a gift from God. What could you do if you had 11 years to change the world, to make the world a better place, to do what you could to help your fellow man, to lift people up? Man, that just sounds amazing. So you tell me, is it worth it to get up off the couch and start living? You know, is that the type of life you want, an unlived life, that all you do is just do stuff for yourself? Well, to me, that's kind of selfish. I realize all of us are selfish to some degree, but what does that mean if all you're doing is just so you can maintain your high level of comfort, which is watching soap operas and eating fast food and drinking Diet Coke all the time? Anyway, the researchers conclude with, these findings are exciting because it's possible that improving people's cardiovascular fitness in middle age could delay or even prevent them from developing dementia, says the first author, Helena Horder. That's her name. She's affiliated with the University of Gothenburg. Okay. Oh, it gives a lot more information, so. Well, okay. Do you know what small vessel disease is? That really means the blood vessels are just way, way, way too small. And I think I've covered that topic from different angles multiple times. But let's put it this way. If you cannot maintain your balance by standing on one foot for a minimum of 30 seconds, then you probably have small vessel disease. If you cannot get enough rich oxygen and blood and nutrients to your brain cells, well, folks, they're not going to work. You're not going to be able to have good balance. I want your balance to improve. I think the vast majority of all cases of dementia, it's probably due to what's called small vessel disease. I'm not saying there's not other causes, but anything that improves blood flow and you're becoming more physically fit, that, folks, that's in your best interest. As you know, the way that I kind of cut through this is start doing balancing exercises. If you don't know what those are, you could probably go to YouTube. I mean, don't do it now because I'm busy talking and you want to keep listening to me, right? No, but go to YouTube right now. Type in, what are the simplest balancing exercises? And then have a conversation. Am I willing to do this even though it's very humbling and very hard? Why is it humbling? Because you're going to fail over and over again. But that's not reality. Trying to protect yourself from failure is just, that is failure. You don't fail if you keep trying. You got to ask yourself, can I learn? Can I grow? Can I get better? Well, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. If you're willing to look at it as a growing proposition. I think it's called a fixed mindset, but when people have that, they're just terrified. They're not going to look good, and they're going to fail. I say, why don't we try to grow and improve some new brain cells? Improve the nerve flow from your brain down to the bottom of your feet. Make your body obey you. Make it do the very thing that maybe you don't want it to do. Make your body stand on one foot. I had a guy the other day, I won't tell you his name, could have been Bill, but I'm not going to say that. He can do it for 8 minutes on each foot. Now he said, no, it doesn't look pretty. I'm going, who cares? That's awesome. Way to go. Now there's a man that can accept a challenge, and he's trying to improve himself. Man, I got to have a lot of respect for that. Anyway, I have no idea what happened with the control board today. I thought I had all the buttons pushed right, but what's probably going to happen is Monday they'll call me and say, well, you didn't have this button pushed right, or something happened, but I'll let them know. Thank you so much for your patience this morning. Lord willing, I will be able to take phone calls this time next week. Hope everybody has a great weekend.